Hi, I'm Natasha Leggero, and you're listening to Radio 8 Ball with Andras Jones.
Welcome to Radio 8 Ball, the pop oracle, where we answer questions by picking songs at random and interpreting these randomly chosen songs as the answers to the questions, like picking musical tarot cards. My name is Andras Jones, and I'm the host of Radio 8 Ball. I like to think of this format as calisthenics for the part of our mind that recognizes synchronicity. Synchronicity, after all, is not a sporadic phenomenon, it's a constant, and sometimes we notice it. When we do, our lives get richer and more fun. And when we use music as an interface, well, that's just plain groovy. The Oracle fodder for today's show is being provided by a music legend, the great Jimmy Webb, who's going to be in town this week for a couple of shows at Jazz Alley. Jimmy Webb is the author of classics like MacArthur Park, Up, Up, and Away, Wichita Lineman, By the Time I Get to Phoenix, The Highwayman, and many others. Today, he's going to be sharing his insight into the background of his songs as part of our musical divinations, and we've got a great group of guests lined up to ask the questions. Throughout this broadcast, I invite you to invest the questions asked with your own intentions, and the best way to do that is to start thinking of your question now. We'll be right back with Jimmy Webb.
This hour of the Radio 8 Ball Show on Alternative Talk 1150 AM was brought to you by the Olympia Cloud Council, providing overcast skies to the state capital since 1970.
This is Ralph Metzner, and you're listening to the Radio 8 Ball Show with Andras Jones.
Well, here we are back at our old favorite Alternative Talk 1150 AM studios in lovely Bellevue, Washington. As I said in the opening, we are blessed to have the great Jimmy Webb joining us for this episode of Radio 8 Ball. Welcome to Radio 8 Ball, Jimmy.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Now, you're going to be in town this Tuesday and Wednesday, the 10th and 11th of February, to perform at Jazz Alley. When was the last time you played in Seattle?
I played a concert there a couple of years ago, but honestly, I don't remember where it was.
Well, Jimmy, is it okay if I call you Jimmy?
Yes, absolutely.
Great. Well, I'm a songwriter myself, and I've long been aware of you, but as much as I think of myself as kind of a music nerd, I really have not been nearly nerdy enough about you. In preparation for the show, I read your...
Well, thank you. That's very kind of you.
I read your book, Tunesmith, and I immersed myself in as much music of yours as I can get a hold of. And honestly, the staggering number of things I didn't know about you is just humbling. I mean, I was actually part of a project that covered The Highwayman, and I didn't even know you wrote that, which, by the way, is a great song.
Well, I like surprising people, so that's one of the, I guess the hidden blessings of coming to one of my shows is that I do have a few surprises in there.
Oh, yes. I can't wait. I cannot wait. So here's the thing. I wish this was an interview show because I feel like I have at least like 20 questions for you and maybe even one or two bones to pick. And I don't mean Fifth Dimension's producer Bones Howe, if you know what I'm saying. And of course, most people out there don't. But maybe we can explain that joke later. What I'd like to know right now is, can you tell us a little bit about your experience with synchronicity, particularly as a songwriter?
Well, you mean synchronicity a la Buckminster Fuller, or do you want to be...
Sure.
Do you want to broaden that definition? Or I?
Well, what does synchronicity mean for you?
To me, it's almost like a channeling of elements that... that come together almost of their own volition, I would say. And it doesn't happen very often. But when it does happen, it's a feeling of, it's a feeling of a song almost writing itself. It takes on a life of its own. And, well, I mean, not to be too anthropomorphic, but it knows where it's going. And that's one of the great rushes of being a songwriter, is when you sort of catch a wave and everything falls into place. I guess That's the best way I could describe it.
And is there any particular song of yours that you had any particular, like, powerful synchronicity experience with?
Well, I remember one time I was working on a song called "If These Old Walls," and I was writing about an old farmhouse, kind of a planter's house, where I live with my first wife and our kids, and there were some problems in that relationship, but the song was kind of about the house and about the kids. The kids, you know, and all the dreams we followed after is one of the lines, and I thought I was writing a song about a house. I really did. And I found out by the end of the house that the walls were really my walls and the walls that I had erected against communication and communion, you know, with this particular person, so it was revelatory in the sense that all of a sudden I realized that it wasn't about the house, it was about me. So, you know, the song is blessed because it will really come across on two levels at the same time, depending on how you're tuned into it. I think that I have maybe 15 or 20 songs like that that I've written where all of a sudden lock, you know, it's like it's coming at you in at least two levels and maybe sometimes three, you know. That's a synchronicity moment when, you know, all of a sudden you're somehow or another, the ball is rolling uphill. I really don't know where that power comes from or where that, because I certainly don't plan those moments, but they happen anyway.
Well, exploring those kind of moments is really what this show is about. Since we listen to the songs in the context of people's questions, what I find really interesting is how even people who aren't involved in the writing process can, just by paying attention to a song from their own point of view, can completely shift the meaning of a song. And we'll play with this right now.
Okay, sounds really fun and interesting too.
We've got some of our Radio 8 Ball favorites, people who have been guests on the show, lined up to ask questions. We have Lisa Genio from Candy Pants, an LA band, Chris Sand, otherwise known as Sandman the Rappin' Cowboy, and Julie Christensen. And I'm going to start things off now by asking my own question. And my question is inspired by today's Pop Oracle Song of the Day at radio8ball.com, where you can enter a question and have a randomly chosen song from our 78-song musical tarot deck. And every day I allow the Pop Oracle to pick one as the song of the particular day. So today's was the Nine of Discs, or Gain, and Mary Lou Lord's song, The Throng of Blowtown, which I found really interesting because it's a song that's full of nostalgia for your era, Jimmy, that time.
Oh, good.
Sort of when the Brill Building classic songwriting structure broke down into sort of the singer-songwriter and then the sort of Motown-inspired factory thing of like the Wrecking Crew in L.A. And so anyway...
Well, that would be it. I was right in the middle of that.
So, in the song, Mary Lou Lord references Carol Kaye, the great session bass player.
Oh, yeah.
A great
friend of mine, and she was an invaluable to us, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, she held some kind of a mythic place in my mind, and so
yeah.
I had this question, and you probably know the answer to it, but I want to let the Pop Oracle answer it, and then maybe you can fill us in. So, I'm just aware
right.
of her
as from her, you know, playing on all these records, Beach Boys records, Motown records, you know, on just all across the board. But I haven't seen her on anything in years. So my question is, whatever happened to Carole Kaye? And what I'd like for you to do is pick a number between 1 and 8, and we'll let one of your songs from our Pop Oracle deck today answer that question, and then we can talk about it afterwards. So pick a number between 1 and 8.
Wow. I can't wait to see how this is really going to work. So I just need to give you a number, right?
Yep.
Okay, how about 3 then?
Okay, song number 3, the answer to my question, whatever happened to Carole Kaye?
I have been seeking P.F.'s home, but no one knows where he has gone. No one ever heard the song that boy set winging. Oh yeah. Now you might sigh and you might moan and sweat about the skin and bone. Yeah, but you just smiled and read the Rolling Stone while he continued singing. Oh yeah, now listen to him singing.
No, 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 don't sing this song. No, don't sing this song. No, 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 don't sing this song. It belongs to be a song. Oh.
Hide his crucified, his staring glassy-eyed out through the parlor door. Oh, yeah. The London Bridge was finally found. They moved it to another town, and now all the people gather round to watch the bridge fall down, but I don't think it will no more. Oh, no, now listen to him singing.
That was Jimmy Webb with P.F. Sloan. And
very young Jimmy Webb with very high voice.
That was the answer to my question, whatever happened to Carole Kaye, the great session bass player who anyone who knows about the great music that came out of California in the late 60s and early 70s knows who she is, but probably she's as obscure as the subject of your song, P.F. Sloan, or even to some people, yourself. The people who are behind the songs, who are the minds and the hearts and the souls behind the songs that we know the faces of.
Do you want me to fill in there?
Well, what I'm curious about, first of all, I mean, you probably have Carol Kay on your speed dial, but and you can tell us whatever happened to her, I'm sure. But
I can.
Can you tell us, first of all, like, maybe the background of that song, you're writing it, and then potential ways that it connects.
Yeah, that's my first album, my first solo album, and I have to tell you the truth. Basically, I was pretty surprised at how good it sounded. We didn't have like a tenth of the punch or volume of a Sergeant Pepper on that track. It's very thin. It's very high. But there's a couple of things about that that are kind of interesting. And one of them is that I'm playing my mother's accordion on the intro. And right after I made that record, someone got into my musical instruments and took some things. And one of the things they took was my mother's accordion. So it's the only thing I have left of my mother's accordion is that intro and then that little bit going out on the end. The other thing is that song's about P.F. Flip Sloan, who actually is going into the Songwriters Hall of Fame this year, which I'm really, really happy about.
So you're a member of the Hall of Fame and also the
president? It's like the song can rest now, you know?
Yeah.
I think that I have one more corollary that I could draw to Carole King, Carole Kay. And that is that this was the first album that I didn't use, that wasn't using the Wrecking Crew, if you want to call them that. They hated that name, by the way. But Hal Blaine, Larry Nechtel, God bless him, he's gone. Tommy Tedesco and different guys were part of that. It was never one group. Al Casey, guitar player. Mike Dacey, a guitar player who worked in that group. Bud Shank, who was a jazz flute player, played thousands of gigs at Shelley's Manhole in L.A. He played the flute solo on California Dreamin'. Okay, he was an adjunct to that kind of clique of guys. Even Glenn Campbell was one of those guys, off and on, in and out. And Carol actually wrote the intro. I don't know whether I would say wrote, but she definitely came up with the intro to Wichita Lineman. She was always good for that. And back in the day, we needed intros, you know. We needed something right at the beginning of the record to button up the listener right from the get-go, and then also, you know, there would be breakdowns in the middle of the song where the bass would have a solo, and then the bass played an important part in fades, because that's where you'll usually hear a bass player stretching out and showing, you know, some of the chops that they really have. Because in most of pop music, there wasn't really a lot for bass players to do, honestly. So, I hear from Carol. In fact, she sent me a message just the other day through another musician and said, "Tell Jimmy Webb I love him." And I told this person, you know, I said, "Well, tell her I love her right back." You know, we couldn't have made any of those records without her, you know.
Yeah, yeah. As I'm thinking, it's almost sometimes with this this format, there isn't a lot to say about how a song connects to the person or to the question. When I'm asking about whatever happened to Carole Kaye, when I hear this song with you singing about P.F. Sloan and a songwriter who, or a musician and a songwriter who sort of blazed their own particular path. And, you know, you can't sing this because this song belongs to P.F. Sloan. And for those of us who, and like I say, for those of you who really know what her contribution was to so many hits that are woven into the fabric of our collective consciousness, it's immeasurable, but it's an insider kind of treasure. And I think that's kind of the charm of that song, is a songwriter. And I love the feel. I know you said that it's thin, but when I listen to that record, it's such a fantastic, and I'm discovering that record this week, this last 2 weeks since I knew you were going to be on the show. And
well, thank you.
It holds up. It is that first record is a really, really great classic singer-songwriter era record that should, you know, people who are fans of that era and might be more familiar with Paul Simon or James Taylor or Carole King or Jim Croce or other Don McLean or other people who came out of that era. I think this, actually, I think yours is a lot closer. It feels a lot more like a Nilsson record, actually, in that way. And it's
he was a big influence. I don't know whether you know that, but he and I were, well, you know, he used to say John Lennon was his best friend, but I was with Harry before John Lennon, and actually knew him for years and years after John Lennon.
I kind of get that.
He actually sang on some of those early records with me. But I mean, I don't want to, you know, digress and go off in a completely different direction. But well, I didn't know if you were aware that there was a real closeness there.
I saw you in the Harry Nilsson documentary.
I gave the elegy at Harry's funeral, and you know, it was a real close relationship. I'm happy to hear you say that, because one of the biggest influences on my life was Harry's album Nielsen Schmielsen, which, you know, came a couple of years later, but I still think that was like Harry's Abbey Road. It was just almost a perfect record. But
I was just reading the anecdote in your book about the Nilsson, maybe it's the Son of Schmielsen sessions that you walked into, where Van Dyke Parks was trying to teach the band the music by singing it to him.
He was humming the part. That was the RC. That was Studio A over at RCA Victor, and that's where Harry really had coke parties. And that particular night, it was Brian Wilson, Danny Hutton, Mickey Dolenz, Van Dyke, and Trevor, this guy who played the steel drums. He was Trevor somebody, but Harry really got into steel drums. All these guys were there, and it was like crazy. I remember the very next morning, that'll give you a clue right there. It's about 4 or 5 in the morning, Harry and I walked out of the studio, and we walked out to Sunset Boulevard to see if we could get a cab, and we sat down on the curb, and we were like a couple of sad-looking sacks of you-know-what, and Linda Ronstadt pulled up to the light in her car and rolled down the window and leaned over and said, "You guys look like shit." It's true. Yeah, she gave us a ride. So, yeah.
So I want we have another caller lined up, and that's a great sort of example of how Radio 8 Ball works.
Okay.
So in the next segment, we're going to be joined by Lisa Genio of the band Candy Pants to ask her question for the Pop Oracle, Radio 8 Ball with Jimmy
okay.
Webb.
Okay.
When Radio 8 Ball isn't on the air, I like to visit the online oracle at radio8ball.com, where there's always an answer, and sometimes I can sing along with it.
Oh, person, person, we're really missing you. It breaks all of our hearts to know that you just want to come on home, so come on home. The telephone, it just doesn't seem to.
The Universal Kabbalah Network, offering transformative programs for personal empowerment. Kabbalah is an ancient spiritual system that opens the gates of the soul to transform your life and expand your consciousness. Find out about seminars and classes at universalkabbalah.net. That's www.universalkabbalah.net. Universal Kabbalah.
Or what is Shmushkin?
Yeah, Mr. Andy Shmushkin. This is my seventh call.
Discovered by comedian Andy Dick and often described as a cross between James Taylor and Lenny Bruce, Shmushkin is a mysterious folk icon who calls what he does women's music. Listen as he delivers his audacious paeans to the goddess with one of the sweetest voices you'll ever hear.
So long ago.
Currently living in exile, Shmushkin can be heard at www.myspace.com/Shmushkin.
If your mom was in porn, it was probably before you were born.
I was so lonely.
Please do your part to make America safe for Shmushkin, and one day he will return.
The jack-o'-lantern looked at me and I responded accordingly.
This is Sandman the Rapping Cowboy, and Radio 8 Ball taught me to ride bull.
Welcome back to the Radio 8 Ball Show with the great Jimmy Webb, who will be performing this Tuesday and Wednesday at Jazz Alley in Seattle. And now we are joined by one of the smartest singer-songwriters I know, and one of my favorite people. Lisa Genio is the face, mind, and voice of LA's Candy Pants, as well as one-third of the vocal group The Roswell Sisters, and the editor of Barely Legal magazine. Guess which one pays the bills? Lisa,
wow.
Welcome back to Radio 8 Ball with the great Jimmy Webb.
Thank you.
Thank you for that.
So much. And can I just say, it's really an honor. I mean, I know you hear that all the time, Mr. Webb.
Well, you know, I'm just sitting here trying to take in, like, what a powerhouse you are.
Oh, you don't know the half of it, Jimmy. So, Lisa, we asked you to be here to ask a question for the Pop Oracle. What is your question for the Pop Oracle?
Well, actually, my question relates to all those things you just rattled off. I'm in the two bands, which are both important to me. I do my job, which is important to me. I've been singing with a third band, and it was supposed to be temporary, started a few months ago, and it's turning into a permanent thing. And it's fun, it's a great band, talented, great people, but I'm afraid I'm spreading myself a little thin. So my question is, should I continue with a third band or be realistic? Because I'm afraid, you know, everything suffers if you take on too much.
Okay. Well, would you
but
pick
I hate to say no to something that I like doing.
Well, let's see what the Pop Oracle has to say through the muse and music of Jimmy Webb. We have 8 songs in the player. We've already chosen song number 3. So could you pick a song, a number between 1 and 8 that is not 3?
I will say 6, please.
Song number 6 from Jimmy Webb.
For
first time we see her, she's only 16. She already has that careless look. Yeah, it's already there in her windblown hair, in the faded photograph with another millionaire. It's a dog-eared photograph with a lipstick grin, stiffly posed just like a smile and mannequin. But there's something familiar in her smile. If you look at her a while, don't it make you feel like a kid again? When she used to come and play, it was Sunday every day. She used to smile and dress that way to be like Marilyn. Years quickly go by, appearances change. Only in films do they stay the same. Look, it's her over there in the spotlight's glare, in this aura mater inn, singing all in love is fair, in this overstuffed Naga-hide lounge with the organ thin, trying to sound just like a singing violin. But there's something familiar in her style. If you listen for a while, can't you hear a heart that is genuine? Oh Lordy, when she used to come and play, it was Sunday. Something familiar in her style. If you listen for a while, don't it make you feel like a kid again? Oh Lordy, when she used to come and play, it was Sunday every day. She threw the best of life away to be like
Julie Christensen from her Something Familiar record. Julie's going to be joining us later in the show to ask her own question. And there she is doing a Jimmy Webb composition, Just Like Marilyn. The answer to Lisa Genio's question, should I spread myself thin and do the third band or not? So,
that was specific, right?
Yeah, I thought that was very specific. So before we get into to talking with you, Lisa, about your answer, Jimmy, can you give us a little bit of... Have you ever heard that version of that song, by the way?
You know, I was thinking about that while I was listening to it, and about halfway through, I realized that I've never heard it before.
That actually,
I've heard something like it, but that was a really very well rendered, you know, version with a lot of emotion and obviously a lot of care went into the solos and the arranging the harmony parts and everything. My approval meter is glowing.
That actually features Greg Lees played the guitar part, and he's one of my favorites.
Who's that again? I'm
Greg
sorry.
Lees, the pedal steel
oh,
player.
Oh yeah, absolutely, yeah. I know it's kind of immodest of me to say that, but I really kind of loved that. It brought the song back to me.
So can you tell us a little bit about the background of that song and what it means for you, and maybe in particularly in the answer in the context of Spreading Yourself Thin?
Well, I don't know. I guess the song is probably sounding a cautionary note in this particular case. That's just my sensibility, but I think that really what that song is about is that when you know that you go out into this world of entertainment, you play gigs, and maybe you try to be a singer, and you try different aspects of it, and if you're sensitive to other people's feelings and work, you realize that there must be literally hundreds of thousands of people out there who are really good. And it's just it's kind of a lucky few that, I don't know, have the synchronicity, if you will, to arrive in the right place at the right time. Like I feel that I was incredibly fortunate to land in Los Angeles, you know, 16 years old, shopping bag full of songs, not a care in the world except to, you know, pursue this thing. And that there was a tremendous demand for music, and everybody wanted a song. I mean, what a moment in time, you know, to arrive on planet Earth. I mean, I think that the song is about some of those that I've seen out there, where I talk about she's singing in this overstuffed Naga Hide lounge with the organ thin, trying to sound just like a singing violin, and yet she's good. She's good, you know, and you know, there but for the grace of God goes, you know, Joni Mitchell or Laura Nyro or, you know,
or Lisa Genio.
Because it's just a roll of the dice. That's all it is, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, talent has a great deal to do with it, but I've seen so many people playing little clubs that I thought had so much talent, you know, and I was just trying to write a song for that person, you know.
Well, it does. It that line particularly did make me think of some of the places I've seen you play shows, Lisa.
Oh, me, yeah. Well, and still am.
And still are. What did you take from that as the answer to your question?
To be honest, a lot of it sounded like a hurricane. Like the connection went kind of bad, so I was just getting the lyrics in pieces. But I was thinking about that. I don't know. It's funny. I don't even think about success, whatever that means, anymore. The reason I say yes to all these things and do them is because they're fun and I just like doing them. So I wish that I cared more about that, and that might help me make a decision, actually.
What's the? Can you tell us what the third project is?
it is, I don't want to say their name, but they are more like country roots sort of band, but they also have a horn section. There's a little bit of, they sound like a soul band sometimes. There's a little jazz. I mean, it's stuff that I don't do in Candy Pants or Roswell Sisters. I get to sing a country duet with the lead singer. And so it's fulfilling in these other ways, and it's just really fun. But I have to be realistic. I spend, you know, a few nights a week rehearsing and have a show almost every weekend now. And, you know, my laundry's piling up and my apartment's pigsty. And even aside from that, like I said before, I worry if you take on too many things, do you end up being mediocre at all of them? Isn't it better to pick one or two things and be as good as you can be at them?
If I may be so bold, I would say something about that, because I'm writing a book right now about being young and sort of trying to do this business, and I speaking for myself, I mean, I would be the first person to say that I definitely had too many irons in the fire.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to do film scores. I was trying to sing, taking vocal lessons, trying to sing, trying to do solo albums, trying to produce other people's records.
Mm-hmm.
I was trying to tour. Somewhere in there, you know, I got to say, I ran across some substance, you know, abuse that was pretty rampant in those days.
Mm-hmm.
And I definitely, I feel like that if there were do-overs, and there aren't do-overs.
Right.
And man, you know, do you begin to realize that big time when you start getting up there. But I would keep it simpler if I had it to do again. I think I would keep it simpler.
Mm-hmm. Did you think that anything you did suffered the creative stuff you were doing, not the other parts of your life?
I don't know. I mean, part of me wants to say do it all, because that's what I did. And I never regretted it, because I felt like, you know, I could do country music, and I could record rock albums, singer songwriter albums, and I could work with established singers, you know, and mm-hmm. and be a pure songwriter, and I could arrange, you know. I mean, I was really trying to do everything. And when I look back on it, I think it was a hell of a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But from a completely, you know, from a like a Sherlock Holmesian perspective of what was the most logical thing to do, and I guess once again, you know, I'm going back to, you know, success being some motivation, and I could have had more success doing less.
That's interesting.
So I don't know. I mean, I admire you because you clearly, you know, your art is in the forefront, and man, you know, that's the way I idealize people. That's the way I think people should be.
Thank you.
And I tell you, if you can find a copy of her band's record, the band's called Candy Pants. In fact, I may even have a copy laying around. I can send it to your management, because you should hear it. She may not be courting success, but she is definitely courting the great music.
Well, I want to hear Candy Pants. That's
thank you.
Goes up to number one on my list.
Right on.
Actually, I've heard.
Oh, now my heart is really pounding.
I've heard a lot about Candy Pants, but I'm not a voracious listener these days. I sort of have to be, you know, given a heads up, you know. So this is mm-hmm. a gigantic heads up, and I'd love to hear the record.
And we have there's a new one coming. We hear so that's one of the projects that Lisa's working on.
Yeah, that's one of the things they're doing. I'm recording again.
Lisa, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thank you so much. And I'm,
thank you for
about.
Putting up with me.
Anytime.
And that's another great example of Radio 8 Ball and how it works. In our next segment, we're going to be joined by Chris Sand, also known as Sandman the Rappin' Cowboy, and of course, the great Jimmy Webb.